Chapter 4. Once we knew nothing, now we know everything. Stay away from our eyes. Our eyes are empty. Look into our faces and see us if you dare. We are the skin of war. We are the skin of war. Once we knew nothing, now we know everything. Skin, Sejarus.
Sweat enough a man could drown in.
He shivered beneath his furs, something he did every night since the battle. Jolting awake, drenched, heart pounding, after images behind his eyes. Keneb, in the instant before he was torn apart, twisting round in his saddle, fixing Blistig with a cold, knowing stare. Not 10 paces away, their eyes locking. But that was impossible.
I know it's impossible. I was never even close. He didn't turn, didn't look back, didn't see me, couldn't. Don't you howl at me from the dark, Keneb. Don't you stare. It was nothing to do with me. Leave me alone.
But this damned army didn't know how to break, understood nothing about routing before a superior enemy. Every soldier alone, that was what routing was all about. Instead, they maintained order.
We're with you, Fist Blistig. See our boots pound? It's north we're going, is it? They ain't pursuing, sir, and that's a good thing. Can't feel it no more, sir, you know. Hood's own breath, there on the back of my neck. Can't feel it. We're in good order, sir. Good order.
Good order, he whispered to the gloom in his tent. We should be scattered to the winds, finding our own ways back to civilization, to sanity.
The sweat was drying, or the scraped underside of the fur skin was soaking it all up. He was still chilled, sick to his stomach with fear.
What's happened to me? They stare, out there in the darkness. They stare, Coltane, Dyker, the thousands beyond Arran's wall. They stare, looking down on me from their crosses. And now Keneb, there on his horse. Ruthen Gud, quick Ben. The dead await me. They wonder why I am not with them. I should be with them. They know I don't belong here.
Once he'd been a fine soldier, a decent commander, clever enough to preserve the lives of his garrison, the hero who saved Arran from the whirlwind. But then the adjunct arrived, and it all started to go wrong. She conscripted him, tore him away from Arran. They would have made him High Fist, the city's protector. They would have given him a palace.
She stole my future, my life.
Malaz City was even worse. There, he'd been shown the Empire's rotted core. Malik Rel, the betrayer of Arran's legion, the murderer of Coltane and Dyker, and all the rest. No, there was no doubt about any of that. Yet there the Gistal was, whispering in the Empress's ear, and his vengeance against the Wiccans was not yet done.
And against us. You took us into that nest, Tavare, and more of us died. For all that you have done, I will never forgive you.
Standing before her filled him with bile. Every time he almost trembled in his desire to take her by the throat, to crush that throat, to tell her what she'd done to him even as the light left those dead, flat eyes.
I was a good officer once, an honorable soldier. Now I live in terror. What will she do to us next? Yagatan wasn't enough. Malaz City wasn't enough. Nor Lether either. Never enough. Naruk? Not enough. Damn you, Tavare. I will die for a proper cause, but this?
He'd never before known such hate. Its poison filled him, and still the dead looked on from their places in the wastes of Hood's realm.
Shall I kill her? Is that what you all want? Tell me!
The tent walls were lightening. This day, the parley. The adjunct, fists arrayed around her, the new ones, the lone surviving old one.
But who looks to me? Who walks a step behind me? Not Sort, not Kindly, not even Raband or Scannero. No, the new Fists and their senior officers look right through me. I am already a ghost, already one of the forgotten. What have I done to deserve that?
Keneb was gone. Since Letharas, Keneb had to all intents and purposes been commanding the Bone Hunters, managing the march, keeping it supplied, maintaining discipline and organization. In short, doing everything. Some people possessed such skills.
Running a garrison was easy enough. We had a fat quartermaster who had a hand in every pocket, a smiling oaf with a sharp eye, and our suppliers surrounded us, and whatever needed doing, why, it was just a written request away. Sometimes not even that, more a wink, a nod. The patrols went out, they came back, watches turned, gatekeepers maintained vigilance. We kept the peace, and peace kept us happy.
But an army on the march was another matter. The logistics besieged him, staggered his brain. Too much to think about, too much to worry over.
Fine, we're now leaner. Ha! What a sweet way of putting it. We're an army of regulars with a handful of heavies and marines. So, we're oversupplied, if such a thing even exists. But it won't last. She wants us to cross the wastelands. And what waits beyond them? Desert. Emptiness. No, hunger waits for us, no matter how heaped our wagons. Hunger and thirst. I won't take that on. I won't. Don't ask.
But they wouldn't, would they? Because he wasn't Keneb.
I really have no reason to show up. I'm worse than Banaskar in that company. At least he's got the nerve to turn up drunk, to smile in the face of the adjunct's displeasure. That's its own kind of courage.
Activity in the camp now, as dawn approached. Muted, few conversations, a torpid thing awakening to brutal truths, eyes blinking open, souls flinching.
We're the walking dead. What more do you want of us, Tavaray?
Plenty. He knew it like teeth sinking into his chest. Growling under his breath, he pulled aside the furs and sat up. A Fist's tent. All that room for nothing, for the damp air to wait around for his heroic rise, his gods-given brilliance. He dragged on his clothes, collected his chill leather boots and shook them to check for nesting scorpions and spiders, and then forced his feet into them. He needed to take a piss.
I was a good officer once.
Fist Blistig slipped the tethers of the tent flap and stepped outside. Kindly looked round.
Captain Raband.
Fist?
Find me Pores.
Master Sergeant Pores, sir?
Or whatever rank he's decided on this morning, yes. You'll know him by his black eyes.
Kindly paused, ruminating, and then said,
Wish I knew who broke his nose. Deserves a medal.
Yes, sir. On my way, sir.
He glanced over at the sound of boots drawing nearer. Fist Faradan Sort, and, trailing a step behind her, Captain Scannero. Neither woman looked happy. Kindly scowled.
Are those the faces you want to show your soldiers?
Scannero looked away guiltily, but Sort's eyes hardened to flint.
Your own soldiers are close to mutiny, Kindly. I can't believe you ordered...
A kit inspection? Why not? Force them all to scrape the shit out of their breeches. A bit of tidying that was long overdue.
Faradan Sort was studying him.
It's not an act, is it?
Some advice, Kindly said. The keep is on fire, the black stomach plague is killing the kitchen staff, the rats won't eat your supper, and hearing the circus is in the yard, your wife has oiled the hinges on the bedroom door. So I walk in and blister your ear about your scuffy boots. When I leave, what are you thinking about?
Scannero answered,
I'm thinking up inventive ways to kill you, sir.
Kindly adjusted his weapon belt.
The sun has cracked the sky, my dears. Time for my constitutional morning walk.
Want a few bodyguards, sir?
Generous offer, Captain, but I will be fine. Oh, if Raband shows up with paws any time soon, promote the good Captain. Omnipotent overseer of the universe should suit. Ladies?
Watching him walk off, Faradan Sort sighed and rubbed at her face.
All right, she muttered. The bastard has a point. That's why he's a bastard, sir.
Sort glanced over.
Are you impugning a Fist's reputation, Captain?
Scannero straightened.
Absolutely not, Fist. I was stating a fact. Fist kindly is a bastard, sir. He was one when he was captain, lieutenant, corporal, and 7-year-old bully, sir.
Faradan Sort studied Scannero for a moment. She'd taken the death of Ruthengard hard. Hard enough to suggest to Sort that their relationship wasn't simply one of comrades, fellow officers. And now she was saying sir to someone who only days before had been a fellow captain.
Should I talk about it? Should I tell her it's as uncomfortable to me as it must be to her? Is there any point?
She was holding up, wasn't she? Behaving like a damned soldier.
And then there's kindly, Fist kindly. Could help us all. Constitutional, she said. God's below. Now I suppose it's time to meet my new soldiers. Regular infantry are simple folk, sir. They ain't got that wayward streak like the Marines got. Should be no trouble at all. They broke in battle, Captain. They were ordered to, sir. And that's why they're still alive, mostly.
I'm beginning to see another reason for Kindly's kit inspection.
How many dropped their weapons, abandoned their shields? Parties have been out recovering items on the back trail, sir.
That's not the point, said Sort. They dropped weapons. Doing that is habit-forming.
You're saying there'll be no trouble, Captain?
Maybe not the kind you're thinking. It's the other kind of trouble that worries me.
Understood, sir. Then we'd better shake them up.
I think I'm about to become very unpleasant.
A bastard?
Wrong gender.
Maybe so, sir, but it's still the right word.
If he was still, if he struggled past the fumes and dregs of the past night's wine and pushed away the ache in his head and sour taste on his tongue, if he held his breath, lying as one dead in that perfect expression of surrender, then he could feel her. A stirring far beneath the earth's cracked, calloused skin.
The worm stirs, and you do indeed feel her, O priest. She is your gnawing guilt. She is your fevered shame, so flushing your face.
His goddess was drawing closer, a drawn-out endeavor, to be sure. She had the meat of an entire world to chew through. Bones to crunch in her jaws, secrets to devour. But mountains groaned, tilting and shifting to her deep passage. Seas churned, forests shook. The worm of autumn was coming.
Bless the falling leaves, bless the grey skies, bless this bitter wind and the beasts that sleep. Yes, Holy Mother, I remember the prayers. The restiturge of Paul, and the weary blood shall feed the soil, their fleshly bodies cast down into your belly, and the dark winds of autumn shall rush in hunger, snatching up their loosed souls. Caverns shall moan with their voices. The dead have turned their backs on the solid earth, the stone and the touch of the sky. Bless their onward journey from which none return. The souls are nothing of value. Only the flesh feeds the living, only the flesh. Bless our eyes, Darek, for they are open. Bless our eyes, Darek, for they see.
He rolled onto his side. Poison comes to the flesh long before the soul ever leaves it. She was the cruel measurer of time. She was the face of inevitable decay. Was he not blessing her with every day of this life he'd made? Banaskar coughed, slowly sat up. Invisible knuckles kneaded the inside of his skull. He knew they were in there, someone's fist trapped inside, someone wanting out.
Out of my head, aye. Who can blame them?
He looked round blearily. The scene was too civilized, he concluded. Somewhat sloppy, true, sly mutters of dissolution, a certain carelessness, but not a hint of madness, not a single whisper of horror. Normal orderliness mocked him. The tasteless air, the pallid misery of dawn soaking through the tent walls, etching the silhouettes of insects, every detail howled its mundane truth.
But so many died. Only 5 days ago. Six now. I can still hear them. Pain, fury, all those fierce utterances of despair. If I step outside this morning, I should see them still. Those marines, those heavies, swarming against the face of the enemy's advance. But these hornets were fighting a losing battle. They'd met something nastier than them, and one by one they were crushed down, smeared into the earth. And the Kundril, gods below, the poor burned tears.
Too civilized, this scene. The heaps of clothing, the dusty jugs lying abandoned and empty on the ground, the tramped down grasses struggling in the absence of the sun's clear streams. Would light's life ever return, or were these grasses doomed now to wither and die? Each blade knew not, for now there was nothing to do but suffer.
Be easy, he muttered. We move on. You will recover your free ways. You will feel the wind's breath again, I promise. Ah, Holy Mother, are these your words of comfort? Light returns. Be patient. Its sweet kiss draws ever nearer. A new day. Be still, frail one.
Banaskar snorted and set about seeking out a jug with something left in it. 5 Kundril warriors stood before Dead Hedge. They looked lost and yet determined, if such a thing was possible, and the bridge burner wasn't sure it was. They had difficulty meeting his eyes, yet held their ground.
What in Hood's name am I supposed to do with you?
He glanced back over a shoulder. His 2 new sergeants were coming up behind him, other soldiers gathering behind them. Both women looked like bags overstuffed with bad memories. Their faces were sickly grey, as if they'd forgotten all of life's pleasures.
As if they'd seen the other side. But lasses, it's not so bad. It's just the getting there that stinks.
Commander?
Sweet Lard inquired, nodding to the Kundril.
They're volunteering to join up, said Hedge, scowling. Cashiered out of the burned tears or something like that.
He faced the 5 men again.
I'd wager Gaul will call this treason and come for your heads.
The eldest of the warriors, his face almost black with tear tattoos, seemed to hunch lower beneath his broad, sloping shoulders.
Gaul Inchicullan's soul is dead. All his children died in the charge. He sees only the past. The Kundril burned tears are no more.
He gestured at his companions.
Yet we would fight on. Why not the Bone Hunters?
Hedge asked.
Fist kindly refused us.
Another warrior growled and said,
He called us savages and cowards. Cowards?
Hedge's scowl deepened.
You were in that charge? We were. And you would fight on? What's cowardly about that?
The eldest one said,
He sought to shame us back to our people, but we are destroyed. We kneel in Kul'tane's shadow, broken by failure. You're saying all the others will just fade away?
The man shrugged. Alchemist Bevedict spoke behind Hedge.
Commander, we took us a few losses. These warriors are veterans and survivors.
Hedge looked round again, studied the Lethary.
Aren't we all? He said.
Bevedict nodded. Sighing, Hedge faced the warriors once more. He nodded at the spokesman.
Your name?
Barak. These are my sons, Sleg, Gent, Pavral, and Reyes.
Your sons? No wonder you didn't feel welcome in Gaul's camp. You're now our outriders, scouts, and, when needed, cavalry.
Bridge burners?
Hedge nodded.
Bridge burners.
We're not cowards,
hissed the youngest, presumably Reyes, his expression suddenly fierce.
If you were, said Hedge, I'd have sent you packing. Barak, you're now a captain of our mounted. Have you spare horses?
Not any more, Commander.
Never mind, then. My sergeant here will see you billeted. Dismissed.
In response, the five warriors drew their sabers and fashioned a kind of salute Hedge had never seen before, blade edges set diagonally across each man's exposed throat. A verdict grunted behind him.
And if I now said, cut, they'd do just that, wouldn't they? Gods below. Enough of that, soldiers, he said. We don't worship Coltane in the Bridgeburners. He was just another Malazan commander. A good one, to be sure, and right now he's standing in Dasem Ultor's shadow. And they got plenty of company, and maybe one day soon Gaul will be there too.
Barak was frowning.
Do we not honor their memories, sir?
Hedge bared his teeth in anything but a smile.
Honor whoever you want in your spare time, Captain. Only you ain't got any spare time anymore, because you're now a Bridgeburner, and us Bridgeburners honour only one thing. And that is, sir, killing the enemy, Captain.
Something awoke in the faces of the warriors. As one, they sheathed their weapons. Barak seemed to be struggling to speak, and finally managed to ask,
Commander Hedge, how do the Bridgeburners salute?
We don't. And as for anyone outside our company, it's this.
Eyes widened at Hedge's obscene gesture, and then Barak grinned. When Hedge turned to wave his sergeants forward, he saw that they weren't quite the bloated grey bags he'd seen only moments earlier. Dread had been stripped from their faces, and now their exhaustion was plain to see, but it had softened somehow. Sweet lard and rum jugs looked almost beautiful again.
Bridge burners get pounded all the time. We just get back up. No bluster, just back up, aye. Alchemist, he said to Bevedict, show me that new invention of yours.
Finally, the Lethary replied. Funny, isn't it?
What is?
Oh, how a handful of Cundrill warriors started you all up.
The sergeants were in shock.
Commander, you looked even worse than they did.
Oh, hood take me. I doubt I can argue that. So tell me, what's the new cusser do?
Well, now, sir, you were telling me about the drum.
I what? When?
You were drunk. Anyway, it got me to thinking.
The two newcomers walked into the squad's encampment, and faces lifted, eyes went flat. No one wanted any damned interruptions to all this private misery. Not now. Badan Grak hesitated, and then pushed himself to his feet.
18th, isn't it?
The sergeant, a Jenabakan, was eyeing the other soldiers.
Which one is what's left of the 10th?
Badan Grak felt himself go cold. He could feel the sudden sharp attention of the others in the camp. He understood that regard. He wasn't a hard man, and they all knew it. So would he back down now?
If I had anything left, I would. I don't know where in the trenches you were, but we met that first charge. It's a damned miracle any one of us is still alive. There's two marines left from the 10th, and I guess that's why you're here, since you, Sergeant, and your corporal are obviously the only survivors from your squad. You lost all your soldiers.
At that comment, Badan paused, gauging the effect of his words. He saw none.
What does that tell us? Nothing good.
He half turned and gestured. There, those ones. They're from Primley's squad. But Sergeant Primley is dead. So is Hunt, and so are Nella and Malvern Dredder, and Corporal Kissware's gone missing. You're left with Skull Death and Drawfirst.
Trailed by his corporal, the sergeant walked over.
On your feet, Marines, he said. I'm Sergeant Gauntye, and this is Corporal Rib. The 10th is no more. You're now in the 18th.
What? Demanded Drawfirst. A squad of 4?
The corporal replied.
We're picking up 2 more from the 7th, and another 2 from 9th Company's 5th.
Ruffle limped up beside Badan Gruk.
Sergeant, Center's back.
Badan sighed and turned away.
Fine, she can handle this then.
He'd had his moment of spine. Nobody would have to look his way any more, expecting...
Expecting what? Who knows? They're just collecting up scraps now, enough to make a rag.
He returned to the remnants of the fire, sat with his back to the others.
I've seen enough. Not even Marines do this for a living. You can't die for a living.
So together new squads all you like, but really, just how many Marines are left? 50? 60?
No, better to let us soak into the regulars, sour as old blood. Good knows I'm sick of these faces here, sick of not seeing the ones missing, the ones I'll never see again. Sholey, Strapmull, Skim, Hunt, all of them.
Cinta was speaking to Gauntye, but the tones were low, level, and a few moments later she came over and squatted down at his side.
Rider in from the burned tears, Kissware's still mending. That broken leg was a bad one.
They took them away?
Who?
That sergeant.
Aye, though it's not so much away as just over there, Badan. Not enough of us to sprawl.
Badan found a stick and stirred at the ashes.
What is she going to do, Cinta?
Kissware?
The adjunct.
How should I know? I've not talked to her. No one has, as far as I can tell. At least the fists look to be in charge at the moment.
Badan dropped the stick and then rubbed at his face.
We got to go back, he said.
That won't happen,
Cinta replied. He shot her a glare.
We can't just pick up and go on.
Keep it down, Badan. We pulled out more soldiers than we should have. We're not as mauled as we could have been. Ruth and Gud, Quick Ben, and then what happened at the Vanguard, those things checked them. Not to mention Fid getting us dug in. Without those trenches, the heavies would never have...
died?
Held. Long enough for the lethargy to bleed off pressure. Long enough for the rest of us to disengage.
Disengage, aye, that's a good one.
She leaned closer.
Listen to me, she hissed. We didn't die. Not one of us still here.
Can't be more obvious what you just said.
No, you're not getting it. We got overrun, Badan, but we clawed through even that. Aye, maybe it was the lady pulling in a frenzy. Maybe it was all the others stepping into the paths of the blades coming down on us. Maybe it was how rattled they were by then. From what I heard, Lostara Yil was almost invisible inside a cloud of blood, and none of it her own. They had to check at that. A pause, hesitation, whatever. The plain truth is, when we started pulling back...
They left us to it.
Point is, could have been a lot worse, Badan. Look at the Cundrill. 6,000 went in, less than 1,000 rode back out. I heard some survivors have been wandering into camp, joining up with Dead Hedge's bridge burners. They say War Leader Gaul is broken. So, you see what happens when the commander breaks? The rest just crumble.
Maybe now it's our turn.
I doubt it. She was injured, remember, and Denil don't work on her. She needs to find her own way of healing. But you're still missing my point. Don't break to pieces, Badan. Don't crawl inside yourself. Your squad lost Skim, but nobody else.
Nep Furrow's sick.
He's always sick, Badan. At least ever since we set foot on the wastelands.
Relico wakes up screaming.
He ain't alone in that. He and Vastly stood with the other heavies, right? So.
Badan Gruk studied the dead fire, and then he sighed.
All right, Sinta. What do you want me to do? How do I fix all this?
Fix this? You idiot, stop even trying. It ain't up to us. We keep our eye on our officers. We wait for their lead.
I ain't seen Captain Sort.
That's because she's just been made a fist. Where you been?
Never mind. We're waiting for Fid, that's the truth of it. Same time as the parley, he's calling all of us together, the last of the Marines and Heavies.
He's still just a sergeant.
Wrong. Captain now.
Despite himself, Badan Gruk smiled.
Bet he's thrilled.
Been dancing all morning, aye.
So we all gather.
He looked over, met her eyes.
And we listen to what he has to say. And then?
Then? Well, we'll see.
Badan squinted at her, his anxiety returning in a chill rush.
Not the answer I expected. Sinta, should we go and get Kiswear?
Oh, she'd like that. No, let the cow stew a while.
It was us being so short, Ruffle said.
Eowev!
You heard me, Nep. Those short tails were too tall. Swinging down as low as they had to was hard. Their armor wouldn't give enough at the waist. And did you see us? We learned fast. We waged war on their shins, stabbed up into their crotches, hamstrung 'em, skewered their damned feet. We were an army of roach dogs, Nep.
I no a roach dog, a ruffle. Ian a wolf is me. Nep wolf.
Relico spoke up.
Think you got a point there, Ruffle. We started fighting damned low, didn't we? Right at their feet, in close, doing our work.
His ebon-skinned face worked into something like a grin.
Just what I said?
Ruffle nodded, lighting another rust-leaf stick to conclude a breakfast of five others. Her hands trembled. She'd taken a slash to her right leg. The roughly sewn wound ached, and so did everything else. Sinta settled down beside Honey. In a low voice, she said,
They had to take the arm.
Honey's face tightened.
Weapon arm.
Others were leaning in to listen. Sinta frowned.
Aye, Corporal Rim's going to be clumsy for a while.
So, Sergeant, said Lookback, are we going to be folded into another squad too? Or maybe swallow up some other one with only a couple of Marines left?
Sinta shrugged.
Still being worked out.
Honey said,
Didn't like what happened to the 10th Sergeant. One moment there, the next just gone, like a puff of smoke. That's not right. Gaunt Eye's a bit of a bastard, Sinta said. No tact.
Let all his soldiers die too, pointed out Lookback.
Enough of that. You can't think of it that way, not this time. Heads went up, heads got blown off. And then they were on top of us. It was every soldier for herself and himself.
Not for Fed, said Honey. Or Corporal Tar, or Korab, or Herb, or even Hellion. They rallied Marines, Sergeant. They kept their heads, and so people lived.
Sinta looked away.
Too much talking going on around here, I think. You're all picking scabs, and it's getting ugly.
She stood.
Need another word with Fid.
Sergeant Herb walked over to Salt Lick.
On your feet, squad.
The man looked up, grunted his way upright.
Collect your kit.
Aye, Sergeant. Where are we headed to?
Without replying, Herb set off, the heavy dropping in two steps behind him. Herb wasn't looking forward to this. He knew the faces of most of this army's Marines. In such matters, his memory was good. Faces, easy. The people hiding behind them, not easy. Names, not a chance. Now, of course, there weren't many faces left. The Marine and Heavy Infantry encampment was a mess, disorganized, careless. Squads set up, leaving gaps where other squads used to be. Tents hung slack from slipshod pegging. Weapon belts, battered shields, and scarred armor were left lying around on the ground, amidst Rodara bones and the boiled vertebrae of Myrid. Shallow holes reeked where soldiers had thrown up. People complained of some stomach bug, but more likely it was just nerves, a terrible aftermath of battle. The acid of surviving that just kept on burning its way up the throat. And around them all, the morning stretched out in its measured madness, senseless as ever. Lightning sky, the spin and whirl of insects, the muted baying of animals being driven to slaughter. One thing was missing, however. No one was saying much of anything. Soldiers sat, heads down, or glancing up every now and then, eyes empty and far away. All under siege, by the gaps round the circle, by the heaps of tents left folded and bound with their clutter of poles and bag of stakes. The dead didn't have anything to say either, but everyone still sat, listening for them. Erb drew up at the foot of one such broken circle of seated soldiers. They'd set a pot on embers, and the smell wafting from the brew was heady, alcoholic. Erb studied them. Two women, two men.
20 seconds, squad?
The elder of the two women nodded without looking up. Erb remembered seeing her. A lively face, he recalled, sharp tongue. Malaz City, maybe, or Jakatan. Islander, for sure.
Stand up, all of you.
He saw resentment in the faces lifting to him. The other woman, young, dark-skinned and black-haired, had eyes of startling blue, which now flashed in outrage.
Fine, Sergeant, she said in an accent he'd never heard before. You've just filled out your squad.
Seeing Saltlick standing behind Erb, her expression changed.
Heavy?
She nodded respectfully. The other woman shot her companions a hard look.
This is the 13th you're looking at, boys and girls. This squad and Hellions, they drank lizard blood that day. So all of you, stand the fuck up and do it now.
She led the way.
Sergeant Erb, I'm Clasp. You come to collect us? Good. We need collecting.
The others had clambered to their feet, but the younger woman was still scowling.
We lost us a good sergeant. Who didn't listen when they said duck?
Clasp retorted.
Always had his nose in something, said one of the men, a Cartulian sporting an oiled beard.
Curiosity, observed the other man, a short, broad Falari with long hair the colour of blood-streaked gold.
The tip of his nose had been sliced off, stubbing his face.
You all done with the elegy? Erb asked. Good. This is Saltlick. Now, faces I know, so I know all of yours. Give me some names.
The Cartulian said,
Burnt Rope, Sergeant. Sapper.
Lap Twirl, said the Falari. Cutter.
Peeling?
Don't count on it, not on this ground.
Sad, said the younger woman. Squad mage, about as useless as Lap right now.
Still have your crossbows?
Erb asked. No one spoke.
First task, then, off to the armory. Then back here and clean up this sty. The 22nd is retired. Welcome to the 13th. Saltlick, keep them company. Clasp, you're now corporal. Congratulations.
When they'd all trooped off, Erb stood alone, motionless, and for a long time, unnoticed by anyone, he stared at nothing. Someone nudged her shoulder. She moaned and rolled onto her side. A second nudge, harder this time.
Go away. Still dark.
Still dark, Sergeant, because you blindfolded yourself.
I did? Well, why didn't you do the same? Then we'd all be sleeping still. Go away.
It's morning, Sergeant. Captain Fiddler wants...
He always wants... Soon as they turn into officers, it's do this, do that all the time. Someone give me a jug.
All gone, Sergeant.
She reached up, felt at the rough cloth covering her eyes, pulled one edge down, just enough to uncover one eye.
That can't be right. Go find some more.
We will, Breathless promised,
soon as you get up. Someone's been through the squads, doing counts. We don't like it. Makes us nervous.
Why?
The lone eye blinked.
I got me 8 Marines.
4, Sergeant.
50% losses ain't too bad for a party.
A party, Sergeant? She sat up.
I had 8 last night.
4.
Right. 4 twice over.
There wasn't no party, Sergeant. Hellion tugged to expose her other eye.
There wasn't, huh? That's what you get for wandering off then, Corporal. Missed the good times.
Aye, I suppose I did. We're melting a lump of chocolate in a pot. Thought you might like some.
That stuff? I remember now. Bulklo chocolate. All right, get out of my tent so I can get decent.
You're not in your tent, Sergeant. You're in our latrine ditch. She looked round.
That explains the smell.
None of us used it yet, Sergeant, seeing as how you were here.
Oh.
His stomach convulsed again, but there was nothing left to spit up. So he rode it out, waited, gasping, and then slowly settled back on his haunches.
Polly L's prissy nipples! If I can't keep nothing down, I'll waste away. You already have, widder,
observed Throat Slitter from a few paces upwind, his voice a cracking rasp. The old scars on his neck were inflamed. He'd taken a shot to his chest, hard enough to dent his sternum with matted rows from the male's iron links, and something from that trauma had messed up his throat. They were away from the camp, 20 paces beyond the eastern picket. Widdershins, Throat Slitter, Dead Smell, and Sergeant Balm. The survivors of the 9th squad. The regulars crouched in their holes had watched them pass with red-shot eyes, saying nothing. Was that belligerence? Pity? The squad mage didn't know, and at the moment was past caring. Wiping his mouth with the back of one forearm, he looked past Throat Slitter to Balm.
You called us up here, Sergeant. What now?
Balm drew off his helm, scratched vigorously at his scalp.
Just thought I'd tell you, we ain't breaking the squad up and we ain't picking up any new bodies. It's just us now.
Widdershins grunted.
We took a walk for that?
Don't be an idiot, said Dead Smell in a growl.
Balm faced his soldiers.
Talk, all of you. You first, Throat Slitter.
The tall man seemed to flinch.
What's to say? We're chewed to pieces. But kindly hog-tying fid like that. Well, bloody genius. We got ourselves a captain now.
There wasn't anything wrong with Sort,
Dead Smell interjected.
Not saying there was. Definite officer, that woman. But maybe that's the point. Fids from the ground up, a marine, through and through. He was a sapper, a sergeant. Now he's captain of what's left of us. I'm settled with that.
He shrugged, facing Balm.
Nothing more to say, Sergeant.
And when he says it's time to go, you're gonna bleat and whine about it?
Throat Slitter's brows lifted.
Go? Go where?
Balm squinted and then said, Your turn, Dead Smell.
Hood's dead. Grey riders patrol the gate. In my dreams I see faces blurred, but still. Malazans, bridge burners. You can't imagine how comforting that feels, you just can't. They're all there, and I think we got Deadhedge to thank for that.
How do you mean?
Widdershins asked.
Just a feeling. As if in coming back he blazed a trail. 6 days ago, well, I swear they were close enough to kiss.
Because we all almost died,
Throat Slitter snapped.
No, they were like wasps, and what was sweet wasn't us dying, wasn't the lizards neither. It was what happened at the Vanguard. It was Lostara Yil.
His eyes were bright as he looked to each soldier in turn.
I caught a glimpse, you know. I saw her dance. She did what Ruth and Gud did, only she didn't go down under blades. The lizards recoiled. They didn't know what to do. They couldn't get close. and those that did, gods, they were cut to pieces. I saw her, and my heart near burst.
She saved the adjunct's life, said Throat Slitter. Was that such a good thing?
Not for you to even ask, said Balm. Fid's calling us together. He's got things to say. About that, I expect. The adjunct, and what's to come. We're still Marines. We're the Marines, and we got heavies in our ranks, the stubbornest bulls I ever seen.
He turned then, since two regulars from the pickets were approaching. In their arms, two loaves of bread, a wrapped brick of cheese, and a Seven Cities clay bottle.
What's this?
Deadsmell wondered. The two soldiers halted a few paces away, and the one on the right spoke.
Guards changed, Sergeant. Came out with some breakfast for us. We weren't much hungry.
They then set the items down on a bare patch of ground, nodded, set off back for camp.
Hood's pink belly,
Deadsmell muttered.
Save all that, Balm said. We're not yet done here. Widdershins?
Warren's a sick, Sergeant. Well, you've seen what they're doing to us mages. And there's new ones. New Warrens, I mean. But they ain't nice at all. Still, I might have to delve into them once I get tired of being completely useless. You're the best among us with a crossbow, Widder. So you ain't useless even without any magic. Maybe so, Throat Slitter. But it doesn't feel that way.
Deadsmell, said Balm. You've been doing some healing.
I have, but Widder's right. It's not fun. The problem, for me that is that I'm still somehow bound to Hood, even though he's, dead. Don't know why that should be, but the magic, when it comes to me, well, it's cold as ice.
Widdershins frowned at Deadsmell.
Ice? That makes no sense.
Hood was a damned jaghut. So yes, it does. And no, it doesn't, because he's, well, gone.
Throat Slitter spat and said,
If he really died, like you say, did he walk into his realm? And didn't he have to be dead in the first place, being the god of death and all? What you're saying makes no sense, Deadsmell.
The necromancer looked unhappy.
I know.
Next time you do some healing, said Widdershins, let me do some sniffing. You'll heave again. So what?
What are you thinking, Widder? Balm asked.
I'm thinking Deadsmell's not using Hood's Warren anymore. I'm thinking it must be Umptos Felak.
It's occurred to me, Deadsmell said in a mumble.
One way to test it for sure, Balm said.
Widdershins swore.
Aye, we don't know the details, but the rumour is that she's got some broken ribs, maybe even spitting up blood, and is still concussed. But with that utter tarl in her, no one can do much about it.
But Umptos Felak is elder.
Deadsmell was nodding.
We should go, then. It's worth a try.
We will, said Balm. But first we eat.
And leave the adjunct in pain.
We eat and drink here, said Balm, eyes flat, because we're Marines and we don't kick dirt in the faces of fellow soldiers.
Exactly, said Widdershins. Besides, he added, I'm starving.
Shortnose had lost the four fingers of his shield hand. To stop the bleeding that had gone on even after the nubs had been sewn up, he had held them against a pot left squatting in a fire. Now the ends looked melted and there were blisters up to his knuckles, but the bleeding had stopped. He had been about to profess his undying love for Flashwit, but then that sergeant from the 18th had come by and collected up both Flashwit and Mayfly, so Shortnose was alone, the last left in Gessler's old squad. He'd sat for a time, alone, using a thorn to pop blisters and then sucking them dry. When that was done, he sat some more, watching the fire burn down. At the battle, the severed finger of one of the lizards had fallen down the back of his neck, between armor and shirt. When he'd finally retrieved it, he and Mayfly and Flashwit had cooked and shared its scant ribbons of meat.
Then they'd separated out and distributed the bones, tying them into their hair. It was what bone hunters did. They'd insisted he get the longest one, on account of getting his hand chopped up, and it now hung beneath his beard, overwhelming the other finger bones, which had all come from leathery soldiers. It was heavy and long enough to thump against his chest when he walked, which is what he decided to do once he realized that he was lonely. Kit packed, slung over one shoulder, he set out. 32 paces took him into Fiddler's old squad's camp, where he found a place to set up his tent, left his satchel in that spot, and then walked over to sit down with the other soldiers. The pretty little woman seated on his right handed him a tin cup filled with steaming something. When he smiled his thanks, she didn't smile back, which was when he recalled that her name was Smiles. This, he decided, was better than being lonely.
Got competition, Korab?
Don't say that, the Seven Cities warrior replied.
Shortnose wants to be our new fist, Cuttle explained.
Making what? 4 fists in this squad? Me, Corporal Tar, Korik, and now Shortnose.
I was a corporal, not a fist, said Tar. Besides, I don't punch, I just take 'em.
Cuttle snorted. Hardly. You went forward, no different from any fist I ever seen.
I went forward to stand still, Sapper.
Well, that's a good point, Cuttle conceded. I stand corrected, then.
I just realized something, said Smiles. We got no sergeant anymore, unless it's you, Tar. And if that's the case, then we need a new corporal, and since I'm the only one left with any brains, it's got to be me.
Tar scratched at his graying beard. Was thinking Korab, actually.
He needs his own private weapons wagon. I kept my leathery sword, Korab retorted. I didn't lose anything this time. Let's vote on it.
Let's not, Smiles, said Tar.
Korab Bilan Thenualis, you're now the 4th squad's corporal. Congratulations. He's barely stopped being a recruit,
Smiles scowled at everyone. Cream will rise, said Cuttle.
Korik bared his teeth at Smiles.
Live with it, soldier.
I'm corporal now, said Korab. Did you hear that, Shortnose? I'm corporal now.
The heavy looked up from his cup.
Hear what?
Losing Bottle had hurt them. Cuttle could see that in their faces. The squad's first loss, at least as far as he could recall. First from the originals, anyway. But the loss of only one soldier was pretty damned good. Most squads had fared a lot worse. Some squads had ceased to exist. Some, more like most of them. He settled back against a spare tent's bulky folds, watched the others covertly, listened to their complaints. Korik was a shaken man. Whatever spine of freedom there'd once been inside him, holding him up straight, had broken. Now he wore chains inside, and they messed with his brain, and maybe that was now permanent. He drank from a well of fear, and he kept on going back to it. That scrap back there had been horrible, but Korik had been stumbling even before then. Cuttle wondered what was left of the warrior he'd once known. Tribals had a way of kneeling to the worst vicissitudes of civilization, and no matter how clever the cleverest ones might be, they often proved blind to what was killing them. Maybe no different from regular people, but to Cuttle's mind, somehow more tragic. Even Smiles was slowly prizing herself loose from Korik. She hadn't changed, Cuttle decided. Not one whit. As psychotic and murderous as ever was Smiles. Her knife work had been vicious down there beneath the swing of the lizard's weapons. She'd toppled giants that day. For all that, she'd make a terrible corporal. Tar had been Tar, the same as he always was and always would be. He'd be a solid sergeant, perhaps a tad unimaginative, but this squad was past the need for anything that might shake it up. And we'll follow him sharp enough. The man's a bristling wall,
and when that helm of his settles low over his brow, not a herd of charging Bedouin could budge him. Aye, Tar, you'll do just fine. Korab. Corporal Korab. Perfect. And now Shortnose, sitting like a tree stump, flattened blisters weeping down his hand, drinking that rot-gut Smiles had brewed up, a half-smile on his battered face. You ain't fooling me, Shortnose. Been in the army way too long. You love the thick skull stuff, you heavies all do, but I see the flick of those tiny eyes under those lids. Hear what? Nice one, but I saw the spark you tried to hide. Happy to be here, are you? Good. Happy to have you. As for me, what have I learned? Nothing new. We got through it, but we got plenty more to get through. Ask me then. Ask me then. He glanced over to see Fiddler arriving. Only the neck of his fiddle left, hanging down his back, kinked strings sprung like errant hairs. Most of the red gone from his beard. His short sword scabbard was empty. He'd left the weapon jutting from a lizard's eye socket. The look in his blue eyes was cool, almost cold. Sergeant Tar, half a bell, and then lead them to the place.
Aye, Captain.
We got riders coming up from the south. Perish, a few Kundril, and someone else. A whole lot of someone else. Cuttle frowned. Who? Fiddler shrugged. Parley. We'll find out soon enough.
Told you you'd live.
Hennar Vigolf smiled up at her from where he lay on the cot, but it was an uncertain smile.
I did what you asked, Lastara. I watched.
Her gaze faltered.
Who are you?
He asked.
Don't ask me that. I see that question in every face. They all look at me. They say nothing.
She hesitated, staring down at her hands.
It was the shadow dance. It was every shadow dance.
She met his eyes suddenly.
It wasn't me. I just slipped back inside, and just like you, I watched.
If not you, then who?
The rope. Cotillion, the patron god of assassins.
She grimaced.
He took over. He's done things like that before, I think.
Hennar's eyes widened.
A god?
A furious god. I have never felt such rage. It burned right through me. It scoured me clean.
She unhooked her belt, tugged loose her scabbarded knife. She set it down on the blankets covering his wounded chest.
For you, my love. But be careful. It's very, very sharp.
The haunt is gone from your face, Lastara, said Hennar. You were beautiful before, but now...
An unintended gift, to be sure, she said with some diffidence. Gods are not known for mercy or compassion. But no mortal could stand in that blaze and not come through either burned to ashes or reborn.
Reborn, yes. A good description indeed. My boldness, he added with a rueful grimace, retreats before you now.
Don't let it, she snapped. I don't take mice to my bed, Hennar Vigolf.
I shall try, then, to find the man I was.
I will help, but not yet. The healers are far from finished with you.
She rose.
I must leave you now. The adjunct.
I think Bryce has forgotten me, or assumed me dead.
Don't think I'll be reminding him, she said. You ride at my side from now on.
Bryce.
Hardly. A word in private with Aranicht will do the trick, I think.
The king's brother is collared.
Next time you two meet, you can compare shackles.
Thought you disliked mice, Lastara Yil.
Oh, I expect you to struggle and strain at your chains, Hennar. It's the ones we can't tame that we keep under lock and key.
I see.
She turned to leave the hospital tent, saw the rows of faces turned to her, even among the cutters.
Hood's breath. she muttered. Pleasantly drunk, Banaskar made his way towards the command tent. He saw Fist Blistig standing outside the entrance like a condemned man at the torturer's door.
"Oh, you poor man. The wrong dead hero back there. You had your chance, I suppose. You could have been as brainless as Keneb. You could have stayed in his shadow right to the end, in fact, since you'd clearly been finding it such safe shelter for the past few months. But the sun finds no obstruction in painting you bright now. And how does it feel?"
The man looked ill.
"But you don't drink, do you? That's not last night's poison in your face. More's the pity."
Sick with fear, then, and Banaskar dredged up some real sympathy for the man. A stir or two, clouding the waters, dulling the sharp edges of righteous satisfaction.
"Such a fine morning, Fist," he said upon arriving. "You'll be in trouble soon, High Priest."
"How so?"
"When the wine runs out."
Banaskar smiled.
"The temple cellars remain well stocked, I assure you."
Blistig's eyes lit with something avid.
"You can just go there any time you want, in a manner of speaking. So why do you remain? Why don't you flee this madness?"
"Because Holy Mother wants me here. I am her last priest. She has something in mind for me. Yes, she does."
"I am dreadfully sorry to tell you this, Fist, but that door is a private one, an exclusive one."
Blistig's face darkened. There were two guards outside the command tent, only a few paces away, well within earshot.
"I was suggesting you leave us, High Priest. You're a useless drunk, a bad influence on this army. Why the adjunct insists on your infernal presence at these gatherings baffles me."
"I am sure it does, Fist. But I can't imagine being such a dark temptation to your soldiers. I don't share my private stock, after all. Indeed, I suspect seeing me turns a soul away from the miseries of alcohol."
"You mean you disgust them?"
"Precisely so, Fist. But we really shouldn't be having this conversation, should we? Because we could swap positions and apart from the drink, not a word need be changed. The real difference is, I lose nothing by their disgust, whereas you..."
"Do we await the lethary contingent, Fist?"
"Simple courtesy, High Priest."
"You liked that idea, did you?
Enough to latch onto it. Fine. Then I will keep you company for a time, at least until their approach."
"Don't leave it too long," Blistig said. "You'd give a bad impression."
"No doubt, and I shall not overstay the moment."
"In fact," resumed Blistig, "I see the other Fists on their way. If you want your choice of seat in the tent, High Priest, best go in now."
"Well, now, I can happily latch on to that."
"Tactical, Fist. I shall heed your advice."
Bowing, he turned and strode between the two guards. Catching the eye of one, he winked and received nothing in return. Lostara Yil turned at the shout to see four marines approaching her. A Dal Honey's sergeant, what was his name? Balm. Three soldiers trailed him, presumably what was left of his squad.
"You want something, Sergeant? Be quick, I'm on my way to the command tent."
"So are we," Balm said. "Got a healer here who maybe could do something for her."
"Sergeant, it doesn't work that way."
"It might,"
said the tall soldier with a scarred neck, his voice thin, the sound of stone wetting iron.
"Explain."
Another soldier said,
"We're thinking he's using an Elder Warren, Captain."
"A what? How in Hood's name can that be?"
The healer seemed to choke on something, and then he stepped forward.
"It's worth my trying, sir. I think Widdershins is right this time, for a change."
Lestara considered for a moment before nodding.
Follow me.
Marines weren't in the habit of wasting people's time, and asking to step into the presence of the adjunct was, for most of them, far from a feverish ambition.
So they think they've worked something out. It'd be worth seeing if they're right. Her headaches are getting worse. You can see it.
The command tent came into view, and she saw the fists gathered at the entrance. They noted her approach, and whatever desultory conversation had been going on a moment earlier fell away.
Fine, then. Even you. Go ahead.
Fists, she said, if you would be so good as to clear a path. These Marines have an appointment with the adjunct.
First I've heard of it, said Kindly.
Well, as I recall, said Lostara, the remaining heavies and Marines are now under the command of Captain Fiddler, and he answers only to the adjunct.
I mean to address that with the adjunct, said Kindly.
There's no point. That will have to wait until after the parley, Fist.
Gesturing, she led the Marines between the company commanders.
And will you all stop staring?
Their attention tightened the muscles of her neck as she walked past, and it was a relief to duck into the tent's shadowed entranceway. Most of the interior canvas walls had been removed, making the space seem vast. Only at the far end was some privacy maintained for the adjunct sleeping area, with a series of weighted curtains stretching from one side to the other. The only occupant Lostara could see was Banaskar, sitting on a long bench with his back to the outer wall, arms crossed and seemingly dozing. There was a long table and two more benches and nothing else, not even a lantern.
No, no lantern. The light stabs her like a knife.
As the squad drew up behind Lostara, one of the curtains was drawn back. Adjunct Tavare stepped into view. Even from a distance of close to 10 paces, Lostara could see the sheen of sweat on that pallid brow.
Gods, if the army saw this, they'd melt like snow in the fire, vanish on the wind.
What are these Marines doing here, Captain?
The words were weak, the tone wandering.
We await formal guests.
This squad's healer thinks he can do something for you, adjunct.
Then he is a fool.
The soldier in question stepped forward.
Adjunct, I am Corporal Deadsmell, 9th Squad. My warren was Hood's.
Her bleached eyes fluttered.
If I understand the situation, Corporal, then you have my sympathy.
He seemed taken aback.
Well, thank you, adjunct. The thing is...
He held up his hands and Lostara gasped as a flood of icy air billowed out around the healer. Frost limned the peaked ceiling. Deadsmell's breaths flowed in white streams. The mage, Widdershins, said,
Omtos Felak, adjunct. Elder?
Tavare was perfectly still, as if frozen in place. Her eyes narrowed on the healer.
You have found a jaggot for a patron, Deadsmell?
To that question, the man seemed at a loss for an answer.
The god of death is no more,
Widdershins said, his teeth chattering as the temperature in the chamber plummeted.
But it may be that Hood himself ain't quite as dead as we all thought he was.
We thought that, did we?
Tavare's lips thinned as she regarded Deadsmell.
Healer, approach.
One hand twisting tight to keep the man upright, Balm guided Deadsmell back outside. Throat Slitter and Widdershins closed in from either side, the looks on their faces fierce, as if they were moments from drawing weapons should anyone come close. The fists backed away as one, and the sergeant scowled at them all.
Make room, if you please, sirs. Oh, and she'll see you now.
Without waiting a reply, Balm tugged Deadsmell forward, the healer staggering, his clothes sodden as frost and ice melted in the morning heat. 20 paces away, behind a sagging supply tent, the sergeant finally halted.
Sit down, Deadsmell. Gods below, tell me this'll pass.
The healer slumped to the ground.
His head sank, and the others waited for the man to be sick. Instead, they heard something like a sob. Balm stared at Throat Slitter, and then at Widdershins, but by their expressions they were as baffled as he was. He crouched down, one hand resting lightly on Deadsmell's back. He could feel the shudders pushing through. The healer wept for some time. No one spoke. When the sobs began to subside, Balm leaned closer.
"Corporal, what in Tog's name is going on with you?" I can't explain, Sergeant."
"The healing worked," said Balm. "We all saw it." He nodded, still not lifting his head.
"So what?" "She let down her defenses just for a moment. Let me in, Sergeant. She had to, so I could heal the damage. And gods, was there damage? Stepping into view, that must have taken everything she had. Standing, talking."
He shook his head.
"I saw inside. I saw..."
He broke down all over again, shaking with vast, overwhelming sobs. Balm remained crouched at his side. Widdershins and Throat Slitter stood forming a kind of barrier facing outward. There was nothing to do but wait. In the moments before the fists trooped inside, Lostariil stood facing Tavare. She struggled to keep her voice steady, calm.
"Welcome back, adjunct."
Tavare slowly drew a deep breath. "Your thoughts, High Priest?" To one side, Banaskar lifted his head.
"I'm too cold to think, adjunct."
"Omptos Felak, have you felt the footfalls of the Jaghut, Banaskar?" The ex-priest shrugged.
"So Hood had a back door. Should we really be surprised? That devious shit of a god was never one for playing straight."
"Disingenuous, High Priest." His face twisted.
"Think hard on where your gifts come from, adjunct."
"At last," she retorted, "some sound advice from you, High Priest. Almost sober." If he planned on a reply, he bit it off when kindly Sort and Blistig entered the chamber. There was a stretch of silence, and then Faradan Sort snorted and said,
"And here I always believed the chilly reception was just a..."
"I'm informed," cut in the adjunct, "that our guests are on their way. Before they arrive, I wish each of you to report on the disposition of your soldiers. Succinctly, please." The fists stared. Lostariil glanced over at Banaskar and saw something flickering in his eyes as he studied the adjunct. Their approach took them down the north avenue of the Malazan encampment, winding down the crooked track between abattoir tents, where the stench of butchered animals was rank in the fly-swarmed air. Atreseda Aranicht rode in silence beside Commander Bryce, hunched against the bleating of Myrid and lowing of Rodara, the squeal of terrified pigs and the moaning of cattle. Creatures facing slaughter well understood their fate, and the sound of their voices crowding the air was a torment.
"Ill-chosen," muttered Bryce, "this route. My apologies, Atreseda."
Two soldiers crossed their path, wearing heavy blood-drenched aprons. Their faces were flat, expressionless. Their hands dripped gore.
"Armies bathe in blood," said Aranicht. "That is the truth of it, isn't it, Commander?"
"I fear we all bathe in it," he replied.
"Cities permit us to hide from that bleak truth, I think."
"What would it be like, I wonder, if we all ate only vegetables?"
"We'd break all the land and the wild animals would have nowhere to live," Bryce replied.
"So we should see these domesticated beasts as sacrifices in the name of wildness."
"You could," he said, "if it helps."
"I'm not sure it does."
"Nor am I."
"I think I am too soft for all this," she concluded. "I have a sentimental streak. Maybe you can hide from the slaughter itself, but if you possess any imagination at all, well, there's no real hiding, is there?"
They drew closer to a broad intersection, and opposite them a sizable troop of riders was converging on the same place, coming up from the south track.
"Well now," said Bryce, "are those Balkando royal standards?"
"Seems the Queen has taken her escort duties well beyond her kingdom's borders."
"Yes, most curious. Shall we await them?"
"Why not?"
They reined in at the intersection. The Queen's entourage was oversized, yet as it drew closer, Bryce frowned.
"Those are Everteen regulars, I think," he said. "Not an officer among them."
In addition to these hardened soldiers, three Bargast warriors rode close to Abrastel, while off to the right rode two Cundril women, one of them 7 or 8 months pregnant. On the left was a pair of armored foreigners, the Perish. Aranect drew a sharp breath.
"That must be Mortal Sword Krughava. She alone could command a palace tapestry."
Bryce grunted.
"I know what you mean. I have seen a few hard women in my time, but that one, formidable indeed.
I doubt I could even lift that sword at her belt."
With a gesture, Queen Abrastel halted the entire troop. She said something to one of her soldiers, and suddenly the veterans were all dismounting, lifting satchels from their saddle horns and setting out into the Malazan camp. Aranict watched the soldiers fanning out, apparently seeking squad camps.
"What are they doing?"
Bryce shook his head.
"I'm not sure."
"They've brought bottles."
Bryce Bedict grunted and then tapped his horse's flanks. Aranict followed suit.
"Commander Bryce Bedict," said Queen
Abrastel, settling back in her saddle.
"We finally meet. Tell me, does your brother know where you are?"
"Highness, does your husband?"
Her teeth flashed.
"I doubt it. But isn't this better than our meeting in anger?"
"Agreed, Highness."
"Now, barring this gilk oaf at my side, and of course you, it seems this will be a gathering of women. Do you quake in your boots, Prince?"
"If I am man enough to not admit it, Highness. Will you be so kind as to perform introductions?"
Abrastel removed her heavy gauntlets and gestured to her right.
"From the Cundril, Hanavat, wife to Warleader Gaul, and with her Shelamassa, bodyguard and one of the charge."
Bryce tilted his head to both women.
"Hanavat, we were witness to the charge."
His gaze momentarily flicked to Shelamassa, then backed to Hanavat.
"Please, if you will, inform your husband that I was shamed by his courage and that of the burned tears. Seeing the Cundril stung me to action. I would he understand that all that the Lethary were subsequently able to achieve in relieving the Bone Hunters is set in humble gratitude at the Warleader's feet."
Hanavat's broad, fleshy face remained expressionless.
"Most generous words, Prince. My husband shall be told."
The awkwardness of that reply hung in the dusty air for a moment, and then Queen Abrastel gestured to the Perish.
"Mortal Sword Krughava and Shield Anvil Tanakalian of the Grey Helms."
Once again, Bryce tilted his head.
"Mortal Sword? Shield Anvil?"
"You stood in our place 6 days ago," said Krughava, her tone almost harsh. "This is now an open wound upon the souls of my brothers and sisters. We grieve at the sacrifice you suffered in our stead. This is not your war, after all. Yet you stood firm. You fought with valor. Should the opportunity ever arise, sir, we shall in turn stand in your place. This the Perish Grey Helms avow."
Bryce Bedict seemed at a loss. Aranict cleared her throat and said,
"You have humbled the prince, Mortal Sword. Shall we now present ourselves to the adjunct?"
Queen Abrastel collected up her reins and swung her mount onto the track leading to the camp center.
"Will you ride at my side, prince?"
"Thank you,"
Bryce managed. Aranict dropped her mount just behind the two and found herself riding alongside the gilk oaf.
He glanced across at her, and his broad, scarified face was solemn.
"That mortal sword," he muttered low. "She comes across with all the soft sweetness of a mouthful of quartz. Well done to your commander for recovering."
"Thank you."
"Don't turn round, but if you did, you would see tears on the face of Hanavat. I think I like your commander. I am Spax, war chief of the Gilk Bargast."
"Atricida Aranicht."
"That means High Mage Aranicht, yes?"
"I suppose it does. War chief, those Evertine soldiers who have gone out among the Malazans, what are they doing?"
Spax reached up and made a clawing gesture beneath his eyes.
"What are they doing, Atricida? Spirits below! They are being human!"